Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about the Homeowners Bill of Rights. It became effective yesterday, January 1st, 2013, and it provides protections for homeowners facing foreclosure. My guests are real property attorneys Mark Seidenfeld, who has law offices in South San Francisco, and Frank Adam, who has law offices in Pacifica. Both attorneys are members of the San Mateo County Bar Association. I want to also let you know about lawyers in the library and free legal clinics. Before the end of the program, I'll give you some websites, and you can find out, at least in the San Mateo County and San Francisco County area, those libraries which have opportunities for you to go and visit attorneys and talk with them at no charge. And I'll give that to you before the end of the program. More than 1 million California homes were lost to foreclosure between 2008 and 2011. And as of July 2012, when Governor Brown signed into law the Homeowners Bill of Rights, an additional 700,000 were in the foreclosure process. And yesterday, on January 1st, 2013, the Homeowner Bill of Rights became effective. We're going to talk about some of the major provisions of that law. Funding for your legal rights is made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association, which is composed of over 1,200 members. It's the only bar association in the country that provides private defender services for indigent criminal defendants. I think I said that both of my guests are members of the San Mateo County Bar, which is the funder of this program. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Mark and Frank, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you very much for studying up on the Homeowners Bill of Rights, because I think it's very important. One of the things that I have been aware of, and I'm not a real property law attorney, is that where homeowners were facing foreclosure and had applied to the bank for a loan modification and were thinking that maybe they're making some progress and they're going to get a modification, all of a sudden they find out, a good percentage of those persons found out, that the banks at the same time were in the process of foreclosing on their homes. And that was one of the major reasons for this law. I'd like you, Mark, if you were to talk a little bit about that.
Sure. This is known as the dual track. Basically, a homeowner would be talking to the bank about either a loan modification or a reduction in principal, or perhaps a short sale, some way of relieving the situation, while the left hand of the bank would be busy going about the foreclosure process. And oftentimes, before there was any conclusion to the effort to modify the loan or otherwise deal with it, the other part of the bank would be actually going through with the foreclosure, selling the house, and the homeowner would basically be out. And this law prohibits the bank from doing that. Even if a foreclosure is in process already.
Right now.
If the homeowner is engaged in discussions with the bank in effort to get a loan modification or some other alternative way of resolving the situation, the bank is not allowed to proceed with the foreclosure while that is going on. In addition, the bank has to wait, I believe it's 30 days after they come to a decision, say yes or no to the loan modification request, before they're allowed to go ahead.
So the bank has to notify the homeowner that the loan modification either has been granted or it has not been granted before it can proceed with a foreclosure.
Exactly. And in addition, the homeowner has a right to appeal a denial.
Appeal to whom?
To the bank.
I see.
In other words, say that there's something wrong, you know, you don't have all my income data, or you made a decision based on incomplete information, whatever. And the bank has to consider anything new that's presented and go through a process. And during that time, also, the bank is stopped from proceeding with the foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that period, when the bank comes to a decision, they again have to notify the homeowner in writing saying, you're right and we are going to modify it, or no, we were right and we're not going to go ahead. You know, at that point, they can go ahead. And
you know, one of my concerns about that provision is, what incentive does the bank or banks now have to really want to grant loan modifications, Frank? It would seem to me at this point there's not much of an incentive. And I'm wondering if loan modifications are going to dry up. What do you think, Frank? I know that you're a guy who doesn't have any strong thoughts on just about anything, but
that's true. I'm pretty passive.
This is
a
joke,
opinion.
Folks. This guy really means business. Former Marine, and he means business. But go ahead, Frank. What thoughts do you have on this from a practical standpoint? Because you're not only a real property lawyer, you're a tax lawyer, you're a CPA, and you are also a real estate broker, are you not?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
So all of the worst things you are.
Yes, yes, I have three licenses for outrage or annoy people. So in any event, I do think that one of the criticisms of this law, and I'm going to quote from the California Association of Realtors, and they say that CAR opposed this well-intentioned legislation because it will encourage the filing of lawsuits intended for delay and further discourage lending. Mm-hmm. I think to some degree that's true. Mm-hmm. I think to the extent that when banks see that they will have to conform to some fairly strict requirements and be subject to some severe penalties, mm-hmm. They are going to ultimately lend to only the most credit-worthy borrowers. It has become difficult now to obtain a loan, and I think this may strengthen the bank's resolve to lend to a very, very small group of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're at great risk if they violate the Homeowner's Bill of Rights. They can, if it's an, as we were discussing off the air, if there's an intentional violation of this law or a reckless violation of this law, the banks face fines the greater of $50,000 or three times the amount of actual damages to the borrower.
Really?
So
wow.
It's going to have some kind of chilling effect.
What you had a point on that.
I would argue the opposite. The banks are, as a group, less popular in this country now than lawyers. That's saying a lot.
That's incredible. That's
saying a lot. There has been so much bad PR for the banking industry as a result of what's gone on in the foreclosures. And I'm not saying that foreclosures are illegitimate. They are. I mean, if you borrow money and it's secured, you don't pay, you're going to lose your house. But the shortcuts that have been taking, that the banks have been doing, the robo-signing of documents that nobody's examined, the mistakes that have been made, the impossibility of finding someone at the bank to actually deal with. Each time you would call the bank, the homeowner gets a different person who has to start all over again because that person has never heard of the homeowner, doesn't have the paperwork in front of them, even though the homeowner has sent it in multiple times. What's been going on has been so outrageous that it had a political repercussion. This bill is one of those repercussions.
How has it been corrected? What can a homeowner who's facing a mortgage who's facing a foreclosure but who wants to get a modification, what can a homeowner expect in dealing with that lender, that bank?
First of all, you have to realize that a bank is not required to offer loan modifications.
No, I understand.
There's a lot of political pressure on them to do so, and all the mm-hmm. big banks are doing so.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're allowed to establish their own criteria, their own credit ratings, things like that for people who are applying for it. What this bill does, it says that there has to be a single point of contact for the homeowner.
What does that mean?
What that means is when you call the bank as the homeowner, you have to be able to speak to somebody who knows your case. It could be a person or a small group of people that has your file there, that knows your circumstances, and is able to discuss it with you intelligently, as opposed to just calling the bank each time and finding a different person who has no idea what the heck you're talking about. This has been a major, major source of frustration for homeowners because you can send in documents five times and the person you're talking to now says, I don't have it in front of me. Mm-hmm. I've dealt with this kind of thing on behalf of homeowners, and it's extremely frustrating.
If the banks don't correct this so that the homeowner feels he or she or they are dealing with someone who is knowledgeable about their attempt, about their loan, about their attempt to get a loan modification. What are the sanctions under this law?
Well, there's two different kinds. The public, the attorney general or a district attorney, can go after a bank, and I believe it's $7,500 per application If they
that's a fine, like a penalty,
a fine per day,
per day
for each application that the bank is not treating the way it's supposed to under the law. Mm-hmm. But more significant to the homeowner can sue and can go for injunctive relief to prevent the foreclosure while this is going on, if the bank is proceeding in violation of the law, and in addition is entitled to actual damages trebled. So if you can show your damages are $50,000 and you prevail, the court could award $150,000 worth of damages.
How can you show, but how can you show your damages? In other words, how do you establish, let's say using just a figure arbitrarily of $50,000, how do you establish something like that, you as a homeowner?
Well, it's difficult to establish damages in many kinds of cases, not just this. But for instance, let's say you have a home that's worth $500,000,
yes,
which in the Bay Area is not at all unusual, but you have a mortgage of only $100,000 on it. And if you lose your home, you've lost $400,000 worth of equity.
All right.
And that's something that I think is pretty easy to establish, get an appraisal of the house. There could be very big damages here. But just to conclude that, it could be your actual damages or $50,000, whichever is greater. So, as I say, the banks could be subject to considerable liability here if they don't do what they're supposed to do under this law.
Well, that sounds like some improvement, Frank.
I'm going to throw Mark a curve here and say I partially agree, and I am not here to advocate for the banks. I've had to deal with a number of them. I've walked a few people through loan modifications prior to this law.
And is that walking on coals or?
It's a very
walking on spikes.
Yes,
walking on spikes.
It is walking on. You have to be very, very careful. And I agree that the banks have just because of the sheer volume of the number of foreclosures have been very, very careless and reckless in the manner in which they've proceeded. So they've cut a lot of corners, and I think that's what led to this bill to some degree. But I will say to people, even with this law enacted, and I think it will serve the purpose of causing the banks to be careful about the way in which they treat their customers. But with regard to the customer, with regard to the borrower, I think they have to be careful, even with this law, they have to be careful about the information they provide to the banks. I have seen loan modification applications, and I'm not going to mention the names of the banks, but they state on the application the borrower understands that the bank will place strict reliance on the information provided. I think that's pretty heavy language.
Yes.
And I think it subjects the borrower in some, or can subject the borrower in some cases, to some form of tort action later on if they've misrepresented themselves on that application.
For example, as to how much they're earning.
How much their earnings, what are their net assets, what is their capacity to pay.
Yes. Which was a problem before that led to this big problem of so many foreclosures.
Right, but what I think borrowers should not do is use this law as an excuse for being careless in what they present to the bank.
That's very important.
Make sure that the information you put down on your application is correct. If you need to, I say this with some self-interest, consult with an accountant, a CPA, a financial advisor, a financial planner, to make sure that the numbers that you are putting down, the calculations that you're making, are indeed correct.
Yeah. I understand that this law applies only to human beings, not corporations. It applies to persons who may be an owner of an occupied residential property of 4 units or less.
Has to be owner-occupied, though.
Owner-occupied.
Yes.
Okay, not
and
rental.
Exactly.
It doesn't apply to your rental property.
Right. It doesn't apply to commercial properties at all.
Okay.
And it only applies to the first lien, the oldest mortgage or deed of trust that's on the property. And many people in California have 2, 3, even 4 liens on their property.
So in other words, you may get some help with respect to the first lien, the first mortgage, but if you've got others that you're underwater on, you're pretty well sunk. Is that right?
That's true, but the reality of this law is it strengthens the procedural protections for homeowners, but in the end, there's still going to be foreclosures. Because, again, the bottom line is if you can't make the payments, you're going to be out of your home. The bank has a security interest in it. They are going to be able to take your property. They're going to have to follow the law, however, to do it. They're going to have to behave much more reasonably than they have in the past. But I think a lot of homes are still going to begin foreclose them.
Why do you know, you mentioned that if someone was turned down for a loan modification, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, you said that the borrower can appeal that decision,
yes.
But it's appealing back to the bank. Why would there be a difference if you're appealing back to the same outfit that has denied your application for a loan modification?
Well, assuming the bank is operating in good faith, they're making their decision based on the material that they have in their file that you've sent them, the documentation.
Yes. Yes.
If you can now come along and say, well, gee, I didn't send you this.
I see.
I forgot.
Okay.
Or this is incorrect. I'm actually earning double what I told you, and here's proof. Things like that. And the bank, in theory, looking at that, if you met, you know, the criteria, you had the appropriate amount of income or assets, whatever, they could then say, yes, we made a mistake, or we will now reconsider our decision.
Pardon me, Frank, go ahead.
The law states that they don't have to consider this reapplication or appeal unless there's been a material change in the borrower's financial circumstances.
I see.
Right.
So that's what makes the difference.
Okay.
You're not just going back to the bank and arbitrarily saying, the borrower's not going back to the bank and arbitrarily saying, look at this one more time. The borrower's saying, look at this one more time in light of the fact that this is now true. I was earning $70,000. Now I'm earning $100,000, or the application was wrong. Net assets were wrong. Understated.
Or I paid off my other bills.
Correct.
I paid off the other loan or something like that, right?
Something that enables them to meet their obligations.
Let me let you know that this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about the new law that became effective on January 1st, 2013, which is the Homeowner's Bill of Rights. It provides some protections for homeowners facing foreclosure. It's not the magic wand, I think, that many people would like to have had, but it does give protections that can be very helpful to some homeowners. My guests are real property attorneys, Frank Adam, who has offices in Pacifica, and Mark Seidenfeld, who has law offices in South San Francisco. If you listen to this program regularly, you will recognize both of these names of these attorneys. They have been very, very supportive of this program and of making themselves available to you, that is, the listeners, both on the air when we do the program, as well as for our Call a Lawyer night, which we've been doing a long, long time, and we usually do it on the fourth Wednesday of the month. And as of this month, January 2013, we'll be doing it on January 23rd. So if you're interested, wherever you may be in the state of California, whether you listen to the program live or delayed, on January 23rd, we will do Call a Lawyer Night at 7 p.m. California time. You might want to jot down the number, 1-800-525-9917. And we will be taking, by the way, on this program, some calls in a few minutes in the second half hour of the program, which is the hour in the Bay Area, hour out on the internet at www.klw.org. But we're going to talk about a few more points before I give the local phone number. And by the way, as we started the program, I mentioned to you that the San Mateo County Bar Association, as well as the San Francisco Bar Association, have free legal clinics. And I want to give you some websites. Those of you who are obviously not in the Bay Area, this is of not much help to you. However, I would say to you that if you want to find out, whether you're in Southern California or the middle part of California, what's going on with your bar association and perhaps its connection with either the law library in your county or perhaps just the county libraries, regular libraries, you might want to call your own library in your community or your law library in your county and find out. And I think you'll find out that there are times when libraries, generally speaking, throughout California are having attorneys there at a particular time to talk with you, no obligation on your part. But let me mention to you the websites for at least the San Mateo County Bar as well as the county regular library as well as the San Francisco Bar. For San Mateo County, it's www.smclaw.org/learnmore.html. And for the San Mateo County libraries generally, not the law libraries, but just the regular libraries, it's www.smcl.org. And for the San Francisco Bar, it has actually it does with Hastings Law School and one other library. Its website is www.sfbar.org/volunteer/larc.aspx. I know that's an awful lot, and I'm not going to repeat it because it takes too long, but I will over the next, as we do the programs, I will continue to repeat this, and certainly you'll be able to find out more. You can, you know, just contact your whether it's the San Francisco Bar or the San Mateo County Bar, you can website to Google them, and you can get the same information. All right, let's do this. If someone is in bankruptcy, I think most people believe that if they file for bankruptcy, there can be a stay on the foreclosure. Now, will this law, the Homeowner's Bill of Rights, help someone like that?
Unfortunately, no. If you are in bankruptcy and the bankruptcy is still pending, this law does not apply. And the stay of bankruptcy, in other words, when someone files bankruptcy, there is an automatic stay that goes into effect that prohibits all legal action against the bankrupt, the person who's applying for bankruptcy. What will happen is the bank will simply go into court and ask for a relief from the stay so they can proceed with the foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, the bankruptcy court will grant that.
I see. Yeah. So that's no luck there, Frank.
No, and it also doesn't apply to people who have already surrendered their property.
Mm-hmm. So it's not retroactive.
Right.
If there's been a trustee's sale of the property, it's gone.
Correct.
Yes.
And also doesn't apply to borrowers who have contracted with an entity whose job is to, or their primary business is advising people on how to avoid their financial obligations. So if you're going to one of the paid agencies that tell you how to hang on to your home or delay the process or
file fraudulent papers.
Right. Engage in some kind of financial gymnastic to avoid what is a legitimate financial obligation, you're not covered by this law
yes.
either.
Okay.
So, and I wanted to make a business point that it's fine to have a recourse for borrowers to have a recourse if they are being given the runaround by the bank or being outright abused by the bank or lectured to by some very bureaucratic bank employee. But that aside for the moment, I do think it's important from a business standpoint for people who are contemplating the purchase of a home to assess their finances carefully. We tend to buy residential property based on emotion, as opposed to financial analysis. I've actually had clients get upset with me when I told them, you really can't afford this house. Do I have time for a small story?
Sure, go ahead.
I once advised a client who wanted to purchase a condominium in the San Francisco area. It was about $750,000. And I was acting as his broker. So we sat down, we did, as I do for most of my real estate clients, a little cash budget. It's nothing elaborate. It just shows him what his principal, his interest, his taxes, insurance are going to be. And we subtract from that all of his general living expenses and taxes. And when we came to the bottom line, he had very little money left over. When are you going to, for incidentals and recreational things? I told him, you can't afford this house. He got a little upset. In fact, he got very upset. He went to the South Bay, and he bought a condominium for roughly the same price. Eventually, he lost it. So if you don't look at your finances carefully before you enter these obligations, you're going to wind up relying on this kind of law to get you out of trouble that perhaps you shouldn't have been in the first place.
You put yourself in that position.
Right.
And it's kind of like assumption
of the risk.
It's
not true for everybody, but I'm saying people do need to take a look at their finances.
Mark has a point.
I can't agree with Frank more. I really do. But remember, the single biggest cause of bankruptcy filings in the United States is medical expenses.
Yeah.
All it takes most people, one serious illness or accident,
it'll do it.
And their whole lives are destroyed.
Terrible. Because
they end up in bankruptcy and they lose their homes. So this law does help people who innocently, suffered some tragedy, and they're deserving of some protection.
I agree. I'm not suggesting that there aren't people who have hit dire straits in life and don't and should be afforded some protection. I have dealt with some banking officials, and they presume to lecture and condescend.
What did he mean by that? Pause there.
I can't imagine.
Let me ask you one more question, because we're nearly to the end of the statewide version of the program, which is half an hour. For those of you listening to us live, we will continue for another half hour and take your calls, by the way. What about tenants? Tenants who are in a property who has been foreclosed at 1 to 4 units. What's the role of the... What can the tenant rely on?
The tenants of a foreclosed property have to be given at least 90 days advance notice before eviction proceedings can be started. In rent-controlled cities like San Francisco...
By what, the lender? By the bank?
By the new owner.
Whoever the new owner is?
Right.
So there may have been a foreclosure with a deed of trust
sale,
trustee sale.
But the property still has a tenant living in it, and that tenant has to be given at least 90 days advance notice before an eviction can take
place. What if there is a long-term lease? What if there's a year's lease left on the property?
The new owner takes it subject to that lease.
Really?
The lease will continue, yes.
So the tenant is allowed to stay for the balance of the lease.
Exactly.
I see.
And I just want to add, in places like San Francisco or Berkeley or L.A. that have rent control, this does not preempt that ordinance. It's still subject to the eviction controls of the San Francisco rent ordinance.
I see. And other rent ordinances throughout, wherever they may be in the state of California.
Yeah.
Okay. We've come to the end of the statewide version of the program. And it is about 7:28 or 7:27 and a half. We want to be really careful here about the timing of this. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. If you have a question, a comment, a concern with respect to, let's say, the Homeowner's Bill of Rights, or maybe you have some question about real property law, although I don't want to make this into a landlord-tenant disputes issues program, although, if we don't get any other calls, we'll take those, because I've got two very able persons here. The number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And for those of you who are listening to us live beyond the Bay Area on the Internet at www.kalw.org, that's the same number, 1-415-841-4134. Again, I want to repeat to you that on 3 weeks from now, on January 23rd, we will do our next Call a Lawyer Night, where you will be able to talk with one or more lawyers off the air in confidence, no obligation whatsoever. It's a great public service that these attorneys perform. They're certified specialists frequently. Frank, pardon me, nearly all the time, Frank Adam is there on real property law, taxation law, etc. He's been wonderful. I must say that with respect to Mark Seidenfeld, he's also done this. Also, Mark has been incredibly generous with his time in terms of being a guest for several years now with Coy Driscoll when we do Landlord-Tenant, as you may recall, if you have listened to those programs. So the number is 1-415-841-4134. If you want to, for Call a Lawyer Night, January 23rd, jot down the phone number. It'll be whether you are going to be listening to the program live or not that evening, that Wednesday evening. You can call in at 7 p.m., between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. It's 1-800-525-9917. Okay, let's do it. Yeah, before we take our first call, Frank.
I wanted to make a point, if there are any licensees out there, real estate licensees out there, a violation of this act is also deemed a violation of the licensing laws.
Mm.
So loan officers, people with real estate licenses who get involved in this process had better know what they're doing.
Because you got to be careful.
Yes, because...
You don't want to lose your ticket.
It's possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
All right, here we go. Lorraine, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm in foreclosure myself, and I've been in my home for 22 years, and I had just loss of income, basically, to keep it really simple. So I had income from a roommate, and that helped to keep the mortgage going because I was just by myself. So I got involved with NACA.
What's NACA? What's that?
Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America.
Okay.
It's a nonprofit program that helps people work with their loans. And so because of my bank that has my home, these are federally funded services apparently that for free to help liaison between the banks and those of us who are in foreclosure or those even people buying. It helps with loans. So I have basically some pending documentation to be able to go in through the liaison, but I thought I understood that this new law didn't come into effect for those that are currently in the process. Is that true?
No, that's not correct.
No, my understanding is that it does cover people who are in the process as long as they have not surrendered possession of the premises and there hasn't actually been a foreclosure sale.
Okay.
You haven't had a foreclosure sale yet on your property, Lorraine?
No, it's been extended.
Okay, all right.
Because I have a customer assistant specialist that's supposed to help with the liaison of this.
Well, do you have any equity left in your home?
I have a lot of equity.
Okay.
I don't have anything borrowed against.
What city are you in?
I'm in San Francisco.
Yeah. You know, I think if I may suggest this, and you have not contacted a lawyer?
I didn't. I only, actually, just last week or week and a half ago, I went through the San Francisco, as you suggest.
The lawyer referrals?
Exactly, through the Bar Association. And
Have you seen a lawyer yet?
I haven't seen one, no.
Okay.
I just spoke with one on the phone.
Okay. Are you to go into the lawyer's office?
No, I haven't done any of that.
I think you need to. I really think you need to. If you've got a lot, if I may suggest that if you have a lot of equity in this property, I think it's very, very important for you to get some good legal advice and not hold off and not hope that things are going to work out all right. I would suggest that although you had a did you pay for that telephone conversation?
I certainly did. I just couldn't do it because I was during work time. They were very accommodating.
Yeah. I think if I may suggest, because in my job as a consumer advocate, as a deputy DA for San Mateo County in the Consumer Protection Unit, I really feel that people have to take some real aggressive action to protect themselves, and you don't want to lose that equity, certainly. And Mark, what comments do you have?
This is a perfect example of what I was talking about earlier, somebody who's been in their home for 22 years and has substantial equity, and due to a change in circumstances, is in danger of losing it.
Yeah.
This law was really written to help people like that, and you should absolutely go out and get some real
advice. You've got to do that, Lorraine, if I may suggest that. And I think it's better that you contact, get back to the lawyer referral service. Pardon me. Get back to the lawyer referral service and see if you can't, or if you have that attorney's number still. The attorney who you should be dealing with, or an attorney who you should be dealing with, should be someone who has a lot of experience in dealing with real property law.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you explain what independent foreclosure review is?
Certainly, I think we can. If you will take the answer on by turning your radio back on, okay?
That would be great. Thank
okay,
you.
Great. Thanks very much for calling. Good luck to you, by the way.
Thank you.
Who would like to explain that?
I believe it's when an independent agency actually reviews the documentation to make sure that it's correct, that there hasn't been a robo-signing, that somebody's actually done this correctly, and that everything is on the up and up.
Yeah. Okay, because Lorraine brought this up, let me just mention this, because I think this is very important for any of you who may have a legal problem, especially if you are facing a foreclosure. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KLW listeners like you. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service, and that number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. Call your own during normal business hours. They'll do their best, and you should be able to get a human being on the phone. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area that you're having the problem with, and they'll set up a half an hour consultation for you, sometimes by phone, usually face-to-face with the attorney. Most counties, and the money doesn't go to the lawyer. It goes to the lawyer referral service. It could be a low of $25, a high of $35 for a half an hour consultation. Certainly for someone, in my opinion, like Lorraine, who is faced with a serious loss, if things don't go the right way, I think you want to certainly put yourself in a position that you're willing to spend more than $35 to try to get some good legal advice. All right, Marie, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about how a borrower can document that they have a modification going or applied for.
Good point.
The reason I'm asking that is when you make an application for a modification and you wait for a response and you call, nobody ever finds it. They can't find it. They ask you for 10 more pieces of paper. You send that, and the next person doesn't know you have a modification. So how would you prove this?
Very good. Frank, please.
Well, one thing you could do is when you mail this documentation to the bank, get some form of delivery confirmation.
Yeah.
Send it priority mail with a delivery confirmation, or better yet, send it certified mail with a green receipt, and make sure somebody has signed for the thing.
And you've got some evidence.
Certified with a request for signing the acceptance.
Yes, yeah. It's called a return receipt,
okay.
And at least that substantiates that you mailed the documents and that the bank indeed received them.
The only problem with that is you can't prove what you mailed. You can only prove that you mailed an envelope. So I have gone down and asked them if they would stamp an application received, and they refused to do it.
Really?
Yes.
No.
Well, they do everything they can to avoid this, and then they tell you they lose it.
So I don't like that at all.
It's very hard to prove.
Yeah.
But it's the reality. And under the new law, they're required to send you a written notification within 5 days of receipt that they have received it.
Oh, but, okay. So then if I did send the certified letter, it should do that.
But the law went into effect yesterday, and today's really the first business day of the year.
Right.
So we don't know how this is going to be interpreted, what's going to happen. But there is an absolute mandate in the law when they receive something, the application for a loan modification, within 5 business days, they're required to send you a notice in writing saying that they've received it.
Okay, and can you also tell me how I look up this law? What's the citation for it?
It's in the California Civil Code, Section 2920, and all the sections following it.
Okay.
Many, many other sections.
Yeah, and you can also look at Senate Bill 900 on
Great.
The state of California
and
website.
You want to Google it, Marie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can Google it, and it should
under
be
under the homeowner's Bill of Rights.
It should come up.
Yeah.
It
okay.
should come up.
Thank you both.
You also might want to Google Civil Code Section 2920 at SEC. Yeah.
Okay.
But hopefully, Google is very good. It should come up.
It is.
Yeah,
it's a very long.
I wish you would give these sites when you introduce a law so that the listener, who may not be an idiot, can look it up. Okay? For future reference?
I never, never think of any of you as being idiots.
Well, prove it. Give us the citation. Okay. Thanks
okay,
very much.
Marie.
Happy New Year.
Zing. You got one. Good for you, Marie. Happy New Year to you. All right. Sherry, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Let me interrupt you for a moment. One of the things, Marie, that I think is very important is, who was it who said, someone who acts as his own attorney has a fool for a client. I think everybody who thinks they can do it on their own is being very foolish. So, Marie, even though we didn't give you initially the citations for this, I really feel if you have, like Lorraine, have a considerable equity in your property, you really need to see an expert. You really do, who would be a real property attorney, frankly, to get going. So, okay, Sherry, thank you for being so polite and not talking over me. Go ahead.
Okay, so I am trying to save my mother-in-law's property that is supposed to be auctioned off next week. And I've been in the process of trying to do the loan modification since October. And I found out as of January 1st, they basically sold off the loan to another bank. And so the people I've been dealing with are not going to be dealing with me anymore.
I see.
And I also scheduled an appointment on Friday to meet with a bankruptcy attorney. And you mentioned that even though they'll give you a stay, that the bank will just go and ask for that to be lifted. So am I wasting my time?
How many loans are there on the property, Sherry?
One loan.
Just the one. This is the original loan? In the first deed of trust? No?
No, this property was purchased like in the 1970s, but in 2006 they pulled a loan out on it, and so there's very little equity left.
I see.
But unfortunately it was mismanaged. So at this point, I've got the property tax lowered by over $7,000. I've got the rents up.
Let me interrupt you for a moment. Is your mother-in-law living in the property?
No, it's a rental property.
Oh, see, that's the problem. That's the major problem.
The problem, Sherry, is that this law only applies to owner-occupied residential premises of four units or less. So if your mother-in-law is not living in it, this law is not going to help her at all.
I'm wondering if the bankruptcy is going to help at all. Because then you're still obligated to pay that fee of $4,000 to that bankruptcy attorney.
Well, you might be able to get some help on that through the Bar Association, but we're not allowed to give specific legal advice on the air like this, but I do not think the bankers would be a waste. What will happen will be the new lender is going to come in, and yes, they'll try to get a stay, but the bankruptcy judges, at least my understanding of what's going on, is they're very sympathetic to people in this situation, and you might be able to negotiate something with the new lender. The bankruptcy filing will get you some time.
Sherry, have you seen, I don't recall what you said, have you seen a bankruptcy attorney yet?
No, I've only talked to him on the phone, but I have an appointment on Friday.
You do, okay. And where do you live?
In Oakland.
Do you? I'll tell you what, if you want to call my office tomorrow to perhaps talk with one of the people who's been a great supporter of, let's say, making himself available to persons who might be looking into bankruptcy, etc., Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy, he's down in L.A., but he usually takes calls the Thursday after we do the Call a Lawyer night. If you want to call me tomorrow at my office, and I'll give you my office number in just a minute, and you can call tonight and leave your name and phone number, and I'll call you back. And of course, mention besides your name that you would like the name and phone number of the bankruptcy attorney I mentioned to you, Leon Baer, B-A-Y-E-R. I will call you back and let you know that. You might want to call him, tell him that you called on the program tonight and that I had suggested you might want to call him and kind of, you know, see what thoughts he might have that might be of some help to you. My phone number is 650-363-4097.
Okay.
You got it?
Yep, thank you very much.
Okay, you can call right now, and you'll get my answering machine and leave your name and phone number and that you would like to speak to Leon Baer, and I'll call you back tomorrow.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, take care. Bye-bye. All right, this is Your Legal Rights. We have a few more minutes. If you have a problem with some kind of a real property issue or real estate issue, or if you're facing a foreclosure, and would like to bounce your problem off of my guest. The number is 1-415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you have some other issue with respect to real property law, or although, you know, I'm not saying that we're going to take this and make it now a landlord-tenant program, but if you have a tenant's problem or a landlord's problem and would like to pose a question, you're welcome to do so. We have about not quite 15 minutes left in the program. The number is 1-415-841-4134. My guests are real property attorneys Mark Seidenfeld, who has law offices in South San Francisco, and Frank Adam, who has law offices in Pacifica. Mark represents not only tenants, but landlords from time to time. Frank is not only a real property attorney, he is a tax attorney, he's a CPA, and also a real estate broker. So I've got some real expertise here. Mark, go ahead.
I want to just make a correction to what you just said. I usually represent landlords, not tenants.
Oh, but you represent tenants sometimes.
Oh, yes,
you're not?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, no, I didn't know, and certainly not in the same case.
Absolutely not. But I wanted to add on this subject also that lenders cannot charge a fee to apply for a loan modification.
Have they been doing that historically?
They have been doing that.
This is nice to know.
In addition, they're not allowed to assess late fees while the loan application is the modification application is pending,
which is
something they've also done.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's great to know. Okay, Van, welcome to your legal rights.
Hello. Yeah, thank you. I've got four properties total, but two are totally upside down. One is in Contra Costa County. The other one is up in Calaveras County. My other two properties, one of which I live in, is... You know, it's not underwater, but I've lost my down payment. Mm-hmm. The loan's not underwater. I don't know if I'm using the terminology correctly. I've been going to the banks over and over and over, trying to see if I can either have a modification. Now nobody will talk to me unless I stop paying and fall behind.
I've heard that. Yes,
and ruin my own credit.
Yeah.
And so I started doing that, and I got behind, and sure enough, they started talking to me. But then I had to be bonded for something, and my credit needed to be good. So I very quickly, you know, reached in and paid all the late fees and got current again.
Is this under the home you are occupying?
Yes, even that house. I've got a first and a second on it. It's not an optimal loan.
Could we get your question, though, Van?
Yeah. Do I have to? How do I get these people to take me seriously? Because at some point, I'm either going to go to foreclosure, or they're going to have to help me with a short sale. But I want to avert that. I want to try to get my loans modified now.
Okay, but let me do this. You are where? What city do you live in?
I live in Belmont.
Okay, San Mateo County. Mark has a comment for you.
Your best bet to get them to take you seriously is to get a lawyer working on your case. I hate to say it, but they tend to respond better when there's a lawyer involved than when it's the homeowner himself.
Okay, so you do not think I need to fall behind? Is that what you're saying? That contact a lawyer? Because even a lawyer that I did consult that I haven't yet retained, said the best thing to do right now is fall behind and talk to them, and then we'll talk.
I can't in good conscience recommend that somebody not pay their bills. My advice would be talk to a lawyer and get them to talk to the bank. I don't like the idea of falling behind because one thing leads to another and you could end up losing the property.
Okay, so my fourth property is in San Diego County. And where do you suggest, should I contact the San Mateo Bar since I live here in Belmont?
That's a good question. You could start there. You might contact the San Diego County Bar Association.
Yeah, I think you should.
They have a lawyer referral service, too.
Yeah. Frank, what come?
But I live up here. Yeah.
Well, still, but if you own property there, they would be better situated, I think.
Yeah. But bear with us a minute, Van. Frank wants to say something.
Yeah, as I'm looking at the bill here, it states that a borrower is any natural person who is a mortgagor or a trustor and who is potentially eligible for any federal, state, or proprietary foreclosure prevention alternative program offered by or through his or her mortgage servicer. So if you're on the verge of falling behind, you might fall within the definition of the of borrower and be covered by this law out to the bank.
But that's only with respect to the home that he is living in.
That is correct, only with regard to his personal property.
This will not help you with your other properties, Van.
Okay, I hear you.
Do you understand that?
It's only the one you live in, the homeowner occupied.
Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's the one that is in the least need of modification or anything like that. But my problem is I can't afford to pay on all of them.
Too bad.
Maybe you should talk to a realtor about a short sale.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the latest advice I got from one of the lenders, B of A. They said, get a real estate agent and call us back. Yeah. And I assume that real estate agent will talk to them about prevailing prices and inquire with them upon the viability of a short sale. Is that right?
That's probably your best bet, yeah. Realtors have had success in this, I know from personal experience, so yeah.
The other thing is, and it's more complicated than that, I do have some retirement assets and things like that, so I'm worried that they'll come after those.
Van, you really need to spend some time with a lawyer.
Yeah, definitely.
You really do. I mean, you're talking about, this is not something that can be solved on this radio program. Frank?
Yeah, the one thing you don't want to do, speaking from a tax standpoint, is take from those retirement plans to service this debt. That's going to cost you a fortune in taxes and penalties. So
Van,
don't go down that road.
I highly recommend that you speak to an attorney who knows something about real property law and also has some understanding of the tax laws. So good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time.
Take care, and I wish you a good 2013. Peter, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I have a question about the Homeowner Bill of Rights and the rights extended to people in bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
I read earlier today that if you're in Chapters 7, 11, 12, or 13, that you do not have rights under the Homeowner's Bill of Rights. Is this true?
Yes, that's correct.
Ah, okay, that's unfortunate.
I agree. If the bankruptcy has already been resolved, if it's been discharged, then you are covered by it if the foreclosure is still there. But if you're actually in bankruptcy at the moment, then you're not covered by this law.
If he were to, let's say... And I don't know what the proper term is. If he were to, with his bankruptcy attorney, decide that maybe it's to his advantage to dismiss his case or whatever, then that would possibly put him back into the position of perhaps having some benefits under the Homeowner's Bill of Rights. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Have you discussed this with your bankruptcy attorney, Peter?
Yes.
And what does the bankruptcy attorney say?
He's studying the matter.
Ah, okay. All right.
One of the problems with this law is it is so new that I imagine most of the bank staff don't know much about it. A lot of lawyers aren't aware of it yet. Yeah. It's going to take time for this to be fleshed out.
Yeah. Have you actually filed bankruptcy, have you?
Oh, we're in year 3 of a 5-year Chapter 13.
Oh, you are.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. Well, that's a significant, you progress significantly. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, Clara, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, I am 66. I am trying to hold on to my house. I've been here for 25 years. I have two roommates now trying to hold on to it. It's a predatory loan I have with Wells Fargo. I signed it almost 4 years ago, and it was that kind of loan that goes up every September, $350. And I'm retired, and I'm on a fixed income. And I tried with NACA also, and I tried a modification, and I went through so much paperwork, and it's the same runaround. Mm-hmm. They just say things like, well, why don't you just sell the house and live more affordably?
Well, let me stop you for a moment, Claire. You say this was a predatory loan?
Well, and I define it that way because it's a loan I signed under duress 4 years ago when I separated from my husband, and it's a loan that interest only. Well, you know, it's like you choose from three payments, and the only one I could afford was the first one, which is interest only.
Mm-hmm.
But every September, the loan increases $330-something.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest you need to speak to a lawyer immediately. It may very well be a predatory loan, and
lawyers cost money. And
that's true.
I don't know how to do. I mean,
Clara, how much equity do you have in your home?
About 150 to 200.
Yeah. Yeah, Frank.
I have a question. What is it about the loan that causes it to adjust upward every so often, or every 6 months?
You're asking me. I don't know. I mean, that's the kind of loan it is.
That's probably it's probably a provision in the agreement, I presume.
Oh, yeah, I agreed to it. Of course I agreed to it.
I mean,
under duress.
you've seen the document, I presume, Clara, that talks about the increase on a regular basis. Is that right?
Yes.
And you signed that?
I signed it.
Mm-hmm. You were in duress because you were in the process of getting divorced from your husband. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what to say. And you have not seen a lawyer lately?
Not lately. Mm-hmm. No, I've talked to one on the phone, they say, well, you don't have the income.
Are you, what county are you in, Clara?
Alameda County.
Alameda County. And your source of income is what?
Social Security.
Okay.
And my brother's here with me, and he works, and he contributes, and then...
Let me stop you for a moment, if you don't mind. Why don't you call and speak to legal aid? Why don't you call your Alameda County legal aid office and
see... That's different than the referral?
Pardon?
That's different than the legal referral.
That's right. It is, because it may be that legal aid, since you are 66 years of age and you are living only on Social Security, it may be that... you might find that there may be some kind of assistance that the legal aid office for Alameda County may have available. Otherwise, what you might want to do is call the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service and see if you can't get at least an initial appointment for at least a minimum of half an hour to discuss your issues with someone who knows something about real property law. And Mark, please.
There's a group in San Francisco, Legal Assistance to the Elderly.
Yes.
I don't know if they operate in Alameda County or not, but they're very, very good, and there might be some equivalent group there. Another comment, bankruptcy may be an appropriate step for you. And when you talk to the attorney, you should also discuss that subject.
And Frank has a comment. We're nearly finished with the program, unfortunately. But Frank, go ahead.
Yeah, your use of the term predatory loan just brings something to mind. It's unfortunately not going to help you at this point, but it may help others that are inclined to get what you probably have is something called a variable rate loan.
Yes.
And the two elements that borrowers need to look at before they sign documents agreeing to pay a variable rate loan, they need to look at two elements, and that is the index, that is the basis for computing
the interest
on the loan, and then the more important element is the margin. The index will go up and down, but the margin will never change. So if you have a very high margin loan, which is, it may be that in your case, but if a loan has a very, very high margin, you can get stuck with a very, very high interest payment even when rates are dropping.
We have run out of time. We've run out of time, I'm sorry to tell you. I want to thank you gentlemen very much for joining us. Real property attorneys Mark Seidenfeld and Frank Adam, thanks so much.
Thank you, Chuck.
Very nice to have you on the program. I wish you both a very happy New Year, and I wish all of you a very happy New Year. Your Legal Rights Protection Program Engineer is Eric Wayne. Eric, nice to have you with us this evening. And Production Assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. If you are interested in finding out something about student rights in the education law area or special education services, that's what we're doing next week. My guest will be Peter Sturges, an attorney who specializes in education law. I wish you all a very happy New Year, and please join me next week. I'm Chuck Finney.